Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Blast Podcast, a show where we believe movies can be more than just movies. I'm your host, Steve Watts, joined as always by my co-host, Tommy Jarvis. And today, we have what I'm sure will be a heated episode, because we will be speaking about the evils that were done to Speak No Evil in its American reincarnation, before having a brief discussion about Ty's top 10 movie lists from every year, and how we go about celebrating Friday the 13th. Before we dive in, let's hear a quick word from our sponsor.
It's official. Blast has hit the App Store. To download the app, go to our website at www.blastmovies.net. To support us further, please share the app with your friends and consider leaving a positive review. On our website, you will also find a link to our Kickstarter campaign, where you can help us improve Blast.
We appreciate all of your support on this journey, and we can't wait to see what movies you start getting tickets for. All right, Ty, Blast Tick of the Week.
Dan Pritchard, who I did not know was Morgan's dad. So shout out Morgan, shout out Morgan's dad. Glad you got him using the app. But this is an at-home watch, but that's okay. I picked this movie for one specific reason. It's called the Kane Mutiny Court, Blast Grade B, Movie Grade C-. Watched on a whim. Interesting how it is all shot from the courtroom, and yet the detail makes the image of the ship in your mind. I'm a sucker for courtroom dramas. I like that it's a super contained story, but the reason I picked this ticket is because Kiefer Sutherland is on the cover of this poster. Kiefer Sutherland is one of my favorite actors. Producer Jack is going to get a huge kick out of this one. We're big 24, big Jack Bauer fans over here.
Quick question. Have you ever seen Stand By Me?
Of course. Okay. Of course.
That's Bad such a classic. Kiefer. Yeah, that's a classic Kiefer performance.
Have you seen Lost Boys?
I have not.
Oh, we may have an October movie for you then. He plays a vampire.
Cool. Yeah, I've heard a lot about the movie. Just haven't gotten around to it. I was planning on putting it on my list this October, so I'm happy to add that for one of your categories.
I think we're gonna have to, because I would be stunned if you did not like that movie.
I'm sure I will.
Yeah. What's your last ticket of the week?
All right, so I've got Jalen Mays for The Exorcist, and he has like one of the most terrifying posters of all time for this ticket.
Yeah.
I'm going to show the webcam real quick, but this is what it looks like. It is terrifying. And his review goes, yeah, this is one of my most controversial opinions. This is a rewatch, and I can fully say I really don't like this movie. Frankly, I find it boring and not scary at all. These alternate posters are scarier than the movie, in my opinion. The movie is 2.5 hours, and I didn't really care for the story. I tried to be optimistic, but it's not my cup of tea. It has good acting performances, good cinematography, cool practical effects, but for such a classic horror movie, I expected more. Yes, this movie is 51 years old, and I'm half as old as the movie. But that's just my opinion. I'm not calling it bad. But for me personally, this is overrated. Blast grade D-, movie grade C. This was at the Marcus Theaters Country Club Cinemas, which is cool that he got to see it in theaters. But good to know that if I feel that way before going in, the theater watch probably won't change it for me.
Ouch. Yeah, it doesn't move the needle. I'm guessing you saw it with like four other people too. I feel like those like re-releases of old movies don't perform as well. It's more of just a novelty.
I will say the thing showing at my local theater last year was packed.
Cool. Yeah.
And it was people who hadn't seen it before.
No way.
Yeah.
What an experience. Was it like hooting and hollering, like, or everyone just locked in?
Dude, people like when the Vision Quest wrestling coach's head popped off, people were screaming like, what the fuck?
God, I love that movie. I cannot wait to rewatch it this month or next month, whenever we do it.
It's going to be great. Let's talk Speak No Evil. Do you want to kick it off with your Blast Ticket and Watch experience?
Sure thing, partner. This one was a real blast, a real treat. So I saw this today. I had a wedding Saturday night, couldn't swing it, so went and saw the matinee screening at 12 o'clock. And my goodness. So for those listening and don't have a visual, in my ticket, I also uploaded a picture of the Shudder screaming screening app, I don't know, screenshot from the app Shutter for the original Danish project. The ticket reads, "The image of my ticket is not from this version, but the Danish version that is 100 times better. I wish I could have at least had a fun time with this one, but the couple behind us would not stop giving a play-by-play for every moment. If you're looking for a good scary movie, download Shudder and watch the original instead. Now that's a blast movie." The American version, however, blast grade F, movie grade D minus.
Wow. Nice, man.
Could not stand it.
I am so glad we agree on this, because I was getting ready to text you last night, like, dude, if you like this movie, we're going to have issues.
No. So, all right. My thing was Speak No Evil, the American version. I went into it knowing, after watching the original, that this one was going to be a lose-lose. Either they were going to do the exact same thing and retread a movie that came out 2 years ago, which would not be a justification for its existence, or pivot from what made the original interesting and Americanize, modernize it, manufacture it to be a good popcorn flick. Either way, it loses. I won't say which way it loses, but it fucking loses.
Yes, it does. My watch experience, let's just say, found a way to avoid the theaters for this one because I was not wanting to give up any money to see this remake. And I got, like, as this movie went on, it strays further and further from the original as it goes, and you can kind of see where it's starting to head. And as it went on, I hated it more and more. And eventually, I mean, like, I just started getting ready for bed while I was watching this. Like, I'm brushing my teeth while well, there's some intense stuff happening. And I mean, it's just, I hated this. I didn't make a blast ticket for it because I don't want Blast to have this version. I'm going to make one for the original Danish version, though. And I think this is a good time to talk about it because the original Danish film is one of the movies I reviewed when I worked for the newspaper at Illinois Wesleyan.
You're kidding.
I'm not.
Do you have the original review?
Yeah, I do. Can I pump this out real quick?
Pause, sure.
Title is Danish Film Speak No Evil is an Effective Art House Fright. And I said, Shudder has quietly become a powerhouse in the horror industry. The streaming service is dedicated entirely to the horror genre and has been producing high-quality scary movies consistently over the past couple years. This October, Shudder released Speak No Evil, a truly twisted Danish film. This movie follows a Danish couple, Bjorn and Louise, and their daughter, Agnes, after they're invited to spend time at a rural home in the Netherlands by a Dutch couple, Patrick and Karen. The plot is driven by rising tensions between the families as Bjorn and Louise grow suspicious of their host's true intentions. They're also off-put by Patrick and Karen's son, Abel, who is afflicted with congenital aglossia. He was born without a tongue, hence the title of the film. Speak No Evil is one of the most disturbing movies I have ever seen. I was on the edge of my seat for even the most mundane conversations in this movie, always unsure of what to expect next. Director Christian Taftrup never holds the camera completely still, adding stress to each moment. Taftrup also lit all of the scenes in this film incredibly well. Shadows cast across characters' faces made it feel like no one could be trusted. Though the movie is dark, it succeeds in making sure that all the characters are always visible, even if the setting is not. Adding even more unease to the film was Soon Kolster's unnerving score. Some of the scariest moments in this film wouldn't even be remotely frightening without the eerie noises of the string instruments in the soundtrack. That said, Taftrup chooses the right moments to have no music in the film, leaving characters in complete silence and fear during some of the key moments. This film is full of incredible acting. Morten Bjerin's portrayal of Bjorn is among the best performances I've ever seen in a horror movie. While Bjorn was written very well, Burian made it feel like the character was a real multidimensional person. Although I didn't have any huge problems with Speak No Evil, I think that the film could have been a bit shorter. At 97 minutes, the film is slightly over the average horror runtime. Because of that, I noticed there were two or three scenes throughout the film that didn't add anything to the plot, further the development of the characters, or have any discernible value in relation to the theme. Speak No Evil belongs in the subgenre of art house or elevated horror alongside movies like Hereditary, Midsommar, or The Lighthouse, but Speak No Evil is as effective as those movies with a fraction of their budget. While the aforementioned three movies all had budgets around $10 million, Speak No Evil was given just under $3 million. Despite its lack of funding, the Danish film is a polished, high-quality product at the caliber of the others. I would recommend Speak No Evil to anyone looking to experiment within the horror genre this Halloween. 4 out of 5 stars.
Too long, didn't read. This movie's really good. I was asked before the pod, you know, what defines a great scary movie or a great horror movie? I think I would point to this as Exhibit A or B. I think this is about as well-crafted as it gets. It doesn't need a big budget. It's slow burning. It does a great job building tension. An extreme lack, actually, a complete lack of jump scares. Just great performances, great score. And the way the story unravels is, I don't know, unorthodox. It just checks all the boxes for me. It's haunting. It's uneasy. It's uncomfortable. It's what I want out of a scary movie.
Exactly. And shout out to our boy Sean Fennessy, because I first got this recommendation from listening to The Big Picture.
Oh, okay, Sean. Way to step up. I think you were the reason I watched this. Yeah, I mean, I feel like Speak No Evil, the American version, was on our slate for this, and you made it very adamant, like, dude, no. It is on your homework assignments for Blast this week. Watch the original. And I'm so glad I did, because it did impact my theater experience with the American version. So thank you. The original was literally night and day compared to what I just watched.
Yeah. So we've got, I gave the American version a double F. You gave it an FD minus. What's your grade for the original film?
Well, since I watched it at home on my phone, I'd give it a Blast grade of a B+. It's hard to get an A experience on my phone at 10:30 at night, but it was still pretty phenomenal. I would say you could cut about a scene or two, and that's the only reason I'm not giving it an A or an A+ movie grade. So Blast grade B+, movie grade A-.
I mean, we're pretty aligned here. My Blast grade was a B because I do wish that I could have seen this in a theater. The Bloomington theater market is kind of weird. Marcus shows pretty much just mainstream movies. AMC Classic shows stuff that only after it's collected some returns. Like when Worst Person in the World came out, AMC here showed it 4 weeks later.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I was missing that theater experience, gave it a Blast grade of a B. My movie grade was also an A- for the reasons you just said.
Yeah. So, I mean, what I keep coming back to though, when it comes to this version versus the American version, is I understand why they went that route on the remake. We're going to do one 2 years later, fine. We're going to throw McAvoy on the cover. It's going to make a bunch of money because James McAvoy is a great actor. It's going to bring a lot to this role. I definitely understand the thought process there. But what was stopping Shudder, whatever studio that bought this, from pumping a bunch of money into the marketing, make a sick trailer, edit it the same way they did with the American version, and draw hype that way? You're going to make a killing off a movie that only cost $3 million to make. I don't understand why they didn't just do that. In a Violent Nature just released this year. It's the same thing.
Yeah, I don't really get it either. The only thing I can think of is that people will not show up for horror movies in a foreign language.
Yeah, I guess. But when it only makes $3 million, maybe you can swing it. And if you're going to market the movie, there's plenty of English in the movie. That's why I was so confused when I started watching it. I mean, the couple speaks English for about 50-60% of the movie.
Yeah, it's ridiculous that this had to be remade. Bong Joon-ho's famous quote, once you overcome the 1-inch barrier of subtitles, your whole world is going to open up. Not exact, but pretty much.
No kidding.
I mean, I just don't understand. And the people who won't show up for a foreign film also will sit at home with their captions on the whole time.
Thank you. It's the same. Such bullshit. I don't get it. Same people that don't like animated movies or think they're just for kids. Shallow. Shallow.
Exactly. It's a closed-minded thing. But I do want to ask, what was your very first reaction after this movie? Was it an awestruck thing as this? I mean, the last 15 minutes of the original Speak No Evil is pretty fucking insane.
Yeah, this, I mean, you're talking theatrical, the American version?
No, I'm talking original.
Oh my gosh, impossible to watch. Like I couldn't help but I was cringing the whole movie, but was practically sick to my stomach. But pair that with sheer anger towards our protagonists. I was so frustrated by the end, and that's the point. You want to feel this dark, twisted, horrible ending in that way. I just had a huge gut punch. It didn't feel good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty much the same. I just remember thinking, holy shit, this is really messed up. Like,
but that's what makes it good, is like it takes those risks and does something that probably wouldn't be done in an American version of this movie. And then it comes out 2 years later and it is a little different.
Exactly. And so let's compare that. What was your first reaction after watching the whole American version?
It was exactly what I feared it would become. And I mentioned at the beginning of this pod that it was a lose-lose. Either it was going to do the exact same thing we just saw 2 years ago or go a different route. And the different route I was expecting was some big action set piece for the last 30 minutes and the family wins. And there is no dark, upsetting defeat at the end. The good guys win in this movie, and it's really frustrating. And not in like a, I want to see this family die, and I want to see this dad be a pussy. This dad is still a pussy, but they win, and it just feels cheap compared to what was a super powerful, dark ending in the original.
Yeah, I agree. And I do want to talk about that ending more in depth in a little bit. But I got to talk about my first reaction, because when I first saw this trailer, you had mentioned like, oh yeah, I saw there's a new James McAvoy trailer. It looks really good, with no idea that the original existed. And I went to the theater somewhat soon after that happened, and I saw the trailer, and I'm seeing the kid cutting across his tongue, telling the dad what happened. I'm seeing like every piece of this movie from the original in this trailer, and I'm like, holy shit. So there does have to be a different ending, because they just spoiled the original. and I mean, after watching it, I felt the same way. Like, why does this exist? Why?
Well, I don't know. My favorite part and the reason this exists is because of James McAvoy. And say what you want about the movie, I remember watching the original and thinking the whole time, McAvoy's going to crush this. And in my opinion, he does. He is a very physical actor here. He knows when. He's just really good at playing these uneasy, uncomfortable psychopaths. Like, I think he knocks it out of the park here.
I agree. I think that his performance is really, really good. My issue, though, is that part of what made this movie work for me in the original version is that it was a bunch of people who I'd never seen before.
I get it. Yeah. That's the problem, is that's how you get people in the seats, is you put McAvoy on the poster, put him in the trailers, and make some money.
We just had the star power conversation. You don't got to tell me twice.
Yeah, no kidding. I walked out of this movie thinking, this Speak No Evil, in like an alternate universe, this would be like if Snyder Cut came out first, and then they released the original like Justice League 2 years later, and it's just this disgusting pile of crap.
Yeah, pretty much. What was so we know your favorite part of this movie was McAvoy then, right?
Yes, it without a doubt was.
What was your favorite part of the original?
I hate to say it, but the ending. I liked that it went that dark, because I wasn't expecting it. I really thought the fan, and spoilers to a really good original Shudder movie. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. But I really enjoyed the fact that the family lost, and because of their decisions and lack of decisions, there were consequences to those lack of actions and lack of decisions. So that's what I appreciated the most.
I completely agree that the like twist of finding out what they were doing to those other families is one that will always stand out. It's one that I didn't see coming. What about the worst part of the movie? Let's talk original version first.
This is an extreme nitpick, because I had a good time here. That score you mentioned is phenomenal, I felt like it popped up in some weird spots, like spots that it almost shouldn't have. Like when they were just having a conversation, I believe like early, like vacation or driving towards the vacation spot at the beginning of the movie. There were just weird instances where I felt out of place. Like they had extra score to use and just need to plug it somewhere.
My least favorite part of the original was the MacGuffin, the stuff.
Disgusting. Disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, this is another, like, maybe I'm a bad dad moment, like from the Quiet Place discussion, but damn, that kid can cry all the way home. I'm not going back.
No, dude, that's the exact point of the movie, because any dad, after seeing all the bullshit that just went down, after hearing his wife say, no, we're leaving, you say, fuck that doll. I don't care if you don't like me right now. We're going home. We cannot go back. But because he's afraid to hurt people's feelings, his daughter included, he goes back to the house. Another testament to this guy being a complete weenie. And that's the reason they all, well, the daughter doesn't die, but the parents get murked at the end and the daughter loses her tongue.
And she will die.
Yeah, she will, inevitably. Right. Oh, just slimy. But in that original movie, all I could think about was, why doesn't Abel, the kid without a tongue, try and warn the family? Like, it was driving me nuts. So I will say, with the American version, I'm not happy that it went in this direction. I was just intrigued that we got this hypothetical what if scenario of the kid actually like, dude, you guys need to get out of here. Like, you're cooked. I there was a part of me that enjoyed seeing the what if.
I get that. What I will say in defense of that original is, like, if you were that kid, he's like six in that first movie, right?
Yes.
Like 5 or 6. And in the American version, he's like 12. If you're six, you probably like are too scared to try and do anything.
Yes, it was. And I did notice that with the girl in the American version, like, dude, you look 15. What do you have a pet, like a stuffed animal for? Just didn't work the same.
Yeah, exactly. All right, I think I'm gonna say my worst part of this American version is just its existence, its reason for existence, its ending, and the respect I lost for literally everybody involved on this project.
It's gross, and like rarely would I tell someone like not to go to a theater and see this, but please, if you're picking between the two, I'm actually going to recommend a streaming. Like, go to Shudder and watch the original instead. It's a crazy concept for us blasters here, but I think you got to go the original.
I agree. All right, let's dig a little more into spoilers here. Let's talk about the big change, the big ending twist.
Let's talk about it. I mean, it works if you don't see the original, but we have seen the original, the better version, where this doesn't happen.
Right. And so for viewer, for listeners at home who have not watched this movie and are still listening through the spoiler warning, the original ending to this movie is that the Dutch couple trap the Danish couple and cut out the tongue of their daughter and stone them to death. And then they like abduct the daughter for their own and continue this cycle. You get to see a lot of photos and stuff of past families that they've done this to. So it is a long, long running thing. And one of the creepiest lines in recent horror movie history, very, very close to The Strangers, Because We Can, is, why are you doing this? Because you let us.
It's almost worse. It's almost worse because you just spent the last like 80 minutes watching this couple cringing because they're too afraid to hurt this Dutch couple's feelings, and it costs them their life. Like, even towards the end, after the daughter's lost her tongue, they still get out of the car. They strip down naked, walk to the bottom of the quarry. They don't even like try to fight for their kid. They just sit there and take it. It's so hard to watch. It's so hard to watch, but that's why it's good.
And I don't know if you know this. I did some research on like Danish and just Nordic culture, but it does. Yes. Like, there is a politeness thing that is super over the top there at times. And this is supposed to be a cautionary tale against that, I think that it doesn't work with the new ending.
Yes. Well, it definitely doesn't if, like, we're Americanizing this. Like, imagine Larry David in this scenario. He's getting out of that house in like 4 minutes. Like, babe, get in the car. Guys, but they're not even going on the secondary vacation. Because in this version, you get little hints that McAvoy and his wife are still wackadoos. Like, he like basically insists, like, no, I'm taking your daughter on a motorcycle ride. Like, he still acts aggressive. He's passive aggressive about the vegetarian thing. That doesn't happen in the original. Like, they have no incentive to actually go on this vacation this time. That's just another tidbit, but it just doesn't make sense in this one.
Exactly. And another thing they changed that I'm not a fan of is that the couple in the American version actively sabotages their chances of escape. When in the original, like, these people really can just walk out whenever. They just need to fucking say, like, fuck you, we're leaving. And in the American version, it's like, oh no, the stuffed animal's up a tree. Oh, we slashed your tires. Like,
yes, it defeats the because, and they even use that line again, like, because you let us. And I guess they do to an extent, but they still, like, actively try and, like, sabotage their escape. Another thing they changed was the couple's relationship, because in the original, the scene where, if you see the American version, McAvoy's, like, spying on their conversation about an affair, and they're fighting about some issues they had in the past. In the original Danish version, they're having sex. Like, they're all good. Mm-hmm. There's that tidbit or that little difference. I like that the couple is like a unit in the original. I don't need the, what is that service? What is that? How does that serve the story? Them not being a good couple.
I don't think it serves anything. And I think there are hints of, like, this relationship is struggling in the original a little bit, but there's nothing like, oh, you cheated on me, like, blah, blah, blah. It's like they're, like, maybe these people are going on a vacation to help rekindle their love, or maybe there is a lost spark or something, but we don't really know. Like, we don't get that explicitly told to us through a pretty forced expositional argument.
Yes, exactly. And the moment where they find out that their daughter's sleeping in the bed with the Dutch couple, that, like, you don't hear, I don't even know what her name is in the American version, but Agatha, like, she's, like, screaming in the original. You don't hear that. She just ends up in the bed this time. I did like that in this scene following, where they come back to the house after this happens, and the dad's trying to justify why they're leaving, and the wife's like, no, fuck that. My kid was in your bed. Like, that is a huge, you crossed the line. I did like that that was more blunt and, like, no, that is the specific reason we're leaving. There were like little moments that I enjoyed over this, but the ending that we keep talking about in the American version, that is the reason it's distasteful and gross.
Correct. I mean, in that original ending, I still vividly remember, I was like shutting my eyes. I couldn't believe that they were actually putting this on camera.
Ugh, just gross. It just like lingers on the stoning for a long time. And the tongue. I couldn't believe they showed the tongue getting chopped out. Like, harming kids in a movie, it doesn't and shouldn't happen. So, and again, I'm not like condoning something like that, but they had the balls to do it in the original. And that's why it stands out. It's why it's a good movie. I can't figure it out.
I'm going to say one more thing too. Because in the original, and this is partially pulled from a Letterboxd review I saw that pointed this out. In the original, there is the scene where the Dutch and Danish dad are screaming in the wilderness, like just letting it all out. And that's supposed to be a thing, like later on, you're like, oh shit, no one's going to hear these people when they die. In this movie, it's just there to be there.
Yep. Yeah. It's well said. I mean, just manufactured garbage. That's all this is, recycled garbage.
Yes. And also, did they make the Dutch, or I think it's an English couple in the American version, did they make them into like pedophiles in this movie?
No.
I felt like I missed something. A few reviews I saw were talking about that, and I was like, I don't know.
I'm assuming just because of the like sleeping with kids thing.
That, yeah, that is so, it's so gross.
Yeah, I mean, pedophile or not, it's completely wrong. It, yeah, in every sense of the word.
Right. And oh man, it's just the original is so much better. Please go watch that. I think you can tell which version works better for us. That said, let's do a quick American remakes draft, because there are a few good ones out there.
There are. You can go first.
Really?
Yeah, I think I'm okay.
We're snaking?
We're snaking.
All right, I'm going The Departed.
Yeah.
Which is a remake of Infernal Affairs, for those who don't know. But it does take quite a few liberties in changing that story and making it more like Boston Irish mob centric.
All right. That's a clear number one pick. I'm going to go a Christopher Nolan movie. Give me Insomnia. I enjoy that movie more than most. I think Robin Williams in a bad guy role is really interesting and honestly really good. It's a rare moment where I think Al Pacino is a good actor. I think he's one of the most overrated actors, in my opinion. Sorry, Al. My bad, buddy. But at the turn, I don't know. I want to try and get a good one. I think I can steal my third pick, no problem. So I'm going to go Brothers, the 09 mm-hmm. Gyllenhaal Maguire movie, as my second American remake.
Okay. I like that. I like that a lot. My next pick has to be The Ring.
Oh, okay. Really? I thought you didn't like that one.
It's nowhere near as good as the original, but I think it is still good. I was between taking that and The Grudge there. The Grudge, I actually do kind of prefer the original version, but it's the original version's timeline is so weird. It's like cut up into six different things and very, very confusing. So I'm going to go with The Ring for this one because Naomi Watts is awesome.
What's your third rounder?
So I'm tempted to take Freedom Fries here.
Okay. Is that what you're taking?
No, it's not a movie. Just a little joke. Do you remember that movement?
No.
Oh, well, we briefly protested France's protest of our involvement in an Iraq war by renaming French fries to Freedom Fries.
I do not remember that.
No, my third is going to be The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Okay. I wanted to take that in the third. So, damn it. Thanks for stealing my pick. But don't worry. I had a waiver wire pick, per usual. Give me the Pink Panther. This is an American remake, and I think it's better than its original.
Interesting. That's a good take. The other ones on my list, 12 Monkeys, remake of Les Jetés.
Saw that one coming. What's another one I was just thinking of? Oh, True Lies, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Nice. Yes. The only other one I think I had on there was Funny Games, which was remade. It was kind of like this situation, but it was remade by the same director and is the exact same movie, just in English, like 2 years later.
So with all of these, I think I saw them before I knew they were remakes, funny enough. I don't know if it was just because of age or whatever, but except the Pink Panther. I knew that wasn't an original, but I was also like 9, so I didn't care. At 24, or for you, 22 years old, if you know a movie's a remake of a foreign classic, are you already going in with low expectations or like trying to not like it?
Typically, I am just going to watch the original first, and if I think that there are improvements to be made, then I will go and watch the new one. If not, then I'm going to skip it.
Cheers. I think that's the best approach. It's kind of like reading a book, like, except not, because I'm not a good reader, but you almost want to read the book first because you know it's the best adaptation.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And, man, that brings up a whole nother argument for me, but I won't get into it. I do want to end this Speak No Evil discussion with a quick call to action. Seriously, people, like, get over your fear of subtitles. This original version is something that will rock your socks off. Like, it is so twisted and messed up and a true, like, elevated fright. And this new American version is one that I'm sure people in the US will like as it comes out now, but it is one that is a dime a dozen and I'm sure people will forget about in the next few years.
It sucks, and you brought it up earlier, like the original should have been on the big screen. I think it could have had like a Get Out theater reaction.
You know, I was thinking about that. This Americanized version is kind of like a watered down Get Out.
It is. It totally is. But I think that the original could have had all of those same reactions up to the last 10 minutes. And then you get that awesome, like 1,000-yard stare for the last 10 minutes. No one talks. Everyone sits through the credits. It's that scarring. Like, it would have been a top 10, top 20 memorable theater experience.
I don't know if I know your take on this. Do you know Jordan Peele's original ending for Get Out?
Yeah. And, oh my gosh, could you imagine? I'm glad he went the route he did because of the theater reaction we got. I mean, dude, I was ready to stand up when the TSA car, like, popped up.
Yeah, I am also glad. But there is, like, some parallel universe out there where he goes with the original and it's just...
Oh, God. Well, I mean, do you remember seeing that for the first time? And, I mean, just the immediate, like, oh, fuck. Like, no way they end it like this. Like, he gets mowed down. That would have sucked.
God. The Candyman 2022, it has a moment similar to that. That you, I mean, I'm sure you'll eventually check it out, but we'll talk then.
We'll save it for October.
All right. So, last week, I briefly talked about some selections from my top 150 movies of all time list. Ty, you said you had some lists of your own you wanted to bring in today. You can lead me through this discussion.
Okay. I think I've brought this up a couple times on the pod, but I've been working on this new lifelong project where, I don't know, it is since about 2017, somewhere in 2016, somewhere in that realm, I have become a movie nerd in the sense of movies shape who I am. It is the most important aspect of my life. And I want to be able to pass on my love for movies and like how it shaped me to my kids and to my grandkids. So I'm going to keep track of my favorite 10 movies or top 10 movies of every year so that my kid can go like, all right, at 22 years old, what did my dad like? At 30 years old, what did my dad like? At 17, what was he watching? So from 2017 on, I started making lists and I wanted to rattle off a few from years past that I think you'll get a kick out of.
Okay.
All right. 2017. In the top 10, Spider-Man Homecoming. This isn't one. It's just on the list. Just on the list. Spider-Man Homecoming. Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. It's pretty good taste for a 17-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Logan actually did crack the list. A movie that I'm not a big fan of right now.
Yeah, what's with the hate now, man?
I don't know. Get Out was on the list for 2017. All right, moving on. 2018, my favorite movie, Hereditary. Infinity War was top two. Mission Impossible Fallout was my third favorite of 2018.
That's got to be number one.
Revisionist history, maybe it will be. Into the Spider-Verse. I made the movement, but I wasn't big on it when I saw it in the theaters. It was like after the fact, after I thought about it. A couple others from 2018. Widows, a Jack Beegan favorite. First Reformed, Creed 2. Love, Simon, a movie you and I always joke about because I loved it. You're not so big of a fan of it.
I've never seen it.
What?
Yeah.
Well, fuck you, man. Like, cheesy rom-com, just not up your speed.
Yeah, it's just, it's like, I've also never seen, I don't know, It Ends With Us. Like, it's one of those movies that I just wouldn't expect to crack your top 10.
All right, so I watched it for a film class my freshman year of college. And
that's cool.
I don't know if I caught it on the right or wrong day. But like I remember choking up at one point and like smiling at different moments. It was like a good blast experience.
Do you think I'd like it?
No, I don't. it's too cheesy of a rom-com. Like okay. I'm not going back to revisit Love, Simon. It's like a national treasure for me. Like it's just, it's not, I can't touch it again. It's going to stay in my top five from 2018. You're going to hate this pick, but do you want to guess my favorite movie from 2019?
Endgame.
I'll give you a hint. It's not Marriage Story.
It's not Endgame?
No.
Was that 20?
It's as long as Endgame, though, if not longer.
Oh, my God. The Irishman?
The Irishman was my favorite of 2019.
That is horrible. Oh, my God. You couldn't pay me to watch that.
All right. 2020 and 2021 have asterisks on them because of COVID, so I didn't see a lot of movies that year. But I italicized Haunting of Bly Manor. I did see that in 2020, and it was worthy of a spot on this list because those are practically blast movies at this point.
Yeah, I was talking to my boss. So my boss and I have had quite the exchange over movies the past like week. I hung up a bunch of movie stills at my desk, and I've been getting a lot of comments on them. My boss stopped by. He's like, "Oh, well, what's your favorite movie?" And I said, "A Ghost Story," instantly. And he was like, "Oh, well, that was fast. Like, you had that ready to go." And I was like, "Yeah, I have a top 150 list." And he was like, "Oh, where's Endgame on that list?" And I was like, "Nowhere near it."
He probably crushed his spirit.
He collapsed to the ground. And then when he got up, he said, "I don't know if we can be cool." And then he said, "All right, what's your top sci-fi movie on your list?" I said Interstellar. Or no, I said Blade Runner 2049. He asked where Interstellar was. I said like top 25 or so. I think he also asked about Alien, which is like just sneaking into the top 150. But won him back over with that. Then we had a touch point checking on my progress on Friday, which was Friday the 13th. And we will get into that discussion. But I asked him, "What's your favorite Friday the 13th movie?" And he was looking through them, and he decided on, I think, the original, with an honorable mention to Freddy versus Jason. And then our meeting ended, headed to the bathroom, came back, and he was like, "Yo, you ever seen the Mike Flanagan stuff?" I was like,
"Oh,
yes. Midnight Mass is like the best fucking horror movie I've ever seen in my life." And he was like, "Yes, yes." His favorite is Hill House. His second favorite is Midnight Mass, then Bly Manor, then
the one that no one cares about.
Yeah, the Poe one, Fall of House of Usher.
Yes. Gosh, we did a pod on that one. We've been doing these for a while.
Yeah, when you look back and think, our first ever pod was Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
I know. And just you slam dunked it. Well, revisionist history will say that you're right, but I loved that movie when it came out.
All right, sorry to interrupt your top tens. Go ahead and go through.
No, I'll leave you with a couple. I'll give you one last trivia question, and then we jump to Friday the 13th, because now I'm excited to talk about Jason X and Freddy vs. Jason. In 2020, there were only two movies that I wrote down, because those are the only ones that I saw that came out that year. One of them was Soul. Can you guess the other?
Was it The Gentleman?
No. That if I gave you that hint, it would give it away. But I did see this in theaters.
Okay. And this was 2020?
Yes.
Huh. Let me think here. Is it Onward?
No. That was a Disney Plus one.
Damn.
All right. Final hint. It's scary.
It's scary. Oh, The Hunt.
The Invisible Man.
Oh, that was a good one.
I really liked The Invisible Man. It was the last movie I saw in theaters before everything shut down.
Nice. My last was Onward.
Oh, okay. So that was a theater movie?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, nice work.
Thanks.
Where'd you see it?
I want to say it was February of 20. It was like opening weekend. It was in a like theater full, like completely packed full of children, which took away from the experience a little bit, but it was good. I did tear up.
Was it Kendall or NCG?
Kendall.
I forgot about Onward. I know you're a big Onward truther. Maybe it was like the at-home experience, but I did not really rock with the Holland-Pratt collab.
Yeah, it's fair. I think that if I revisited it now, I probably would not like it that much. But my big Pixar movie that I'll die on a hill for is The Good Dinosaur.
Fair enough. New project for us, because I always use this phrase. I want your top five national treasures. Movies that you loved as kids that you don't want to revisit because you know you won't like them as much.
Got it. Yeah, that's a good one. Number one, MVP, most valuable primate.
Number one, Draft Day.
Dude, holy shit. Yeah, talk about movies that I would never watch now. what was that one with like the high school football team that had won like 200 games in a row?
Oh my gosh.
When the game stands tall.
Yes, that was terrible. That was so bad. Did you like that growing up?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I get it. I saw it in theaters. Boy, that was bad.
Yeah.
You know what movie I loved in theaters? I was 8, but The Blind Side. No go anymore.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Sorry, Michael. You deserve better.
Agreed. Let's talk Friday the 13th. So I texted you on our Friday the 13th. Morgan and I decided to walk over to the nearby gas station. It's like a half mile away at like 10 p.m. on Friday the 13th. We opened the door and there's a black cat just sitting there and it runs away. And I was just ready to close the door and just never leave the house again.
See, I'm not really a Friday the 13th guy. I pay no mention to this, but I'm such a fraud, like at least like, I don't know, a pretender, because I'm still afraid of the dark. Anyone that knows me can act like I still have to sprint in my basement. Like if I'm going to the bathroom, I'm flushing, I'm washing my hands, and I'm sprinting to my bedroom before the monsters catch me as the lights all turn off.
Good God, man. That's hilarious. Have you seen, like, how many of the Friday the 13th movies have you seen?
The original, and then YouTube clips from Jason X, Freddy vs. Jason, and the one where he goes to New York and
Jason takes Manhattan.
Fights the guy. Like, legit, like, street fights the dude.
Yeah, this is a wild franchise. I wrote down here, we're getting pressed for time here. I don't want to run this to an hour 20 by walking you through the whole franchise, so we'll save that for another day. But I'll talk you through the ones I watched for this Friday the 13th, because I usually try to watch at least one, and I try to bring at least one person with me who has not seen the Friday the 13th I'm watching. So last Friday the 13th, I went over to Kate's, and we watched the original Friday the 13th. She thought it was horrible, obviously, because that movie sucks ass. This year, I got home from work and I started Friday the 13th Chapter 4, the final chapter. Do you think that's the final chapter?
Gut feeling tells me no.
Yeah, it has one of my favorite kill scenes in it, though, where the guy being killed does scream, "Oh, he's killing me! He's killing me!" It's just as Jason's like strangling him in the basement. That's an awesome one. It's got young Corey Feldman as the kid in it who like has an obsession with prosthetic masks. Very funny movie, a lot of good action, a lot of good kills. And I followed that up, not with Friday the 13th Part 5, because I don't know if you know this. Friday the 13th Part 5 is somebody copying Jason and pretending to be Jason.
Nah. Oh my God, that got greenlit?
Yeah, because in the final chapter, spoiler alert for this like 40-year-old movie, Corey Feldman like hacks the shit out of Jason with a machete and Jason dies.
No way.
Yeah. So how do you think Friday the 13th Part 6 Jason Lives starts?
Do they like sew them together?
No, this is one of the other. So I watched 3 on Friday. But the grown up Tommy Jarvis, who is who I introduced you as on the pod, grown up Corey Feldman, returns to Jason's grave because he is haunted by hallucinations of Jason. That trauma has really been horrible for him. And so he returns to Jason's grave. He wants to cremate the body to make sure Jason never walks again, right? He stabs Jason through the heart with a fence pole, a metal fence pole, and then has a Jason flashback. And while he's having the flashback, two lightning bolts strike the metal fence post and revive Jason as a zombie squared, because he's a zombie in the first like three or four.
So, all right. So he comes back as the dead body, or he gets replaced. Corey Feldman like becomes Jason.
He comes back as the dead body. The rest of the movie is grown up Corey Feldman trying to stop him again.
God damn it. What are the odds of that?
There are so many great scenes in this one. The RV one stands out, where the guy's jamming out to rock music. His girlfriend's getting killed in the RV bathroom. I'm trying to think of, like, this movie is just unhinged. That's the only way to put it. It is very funny. And then the last one I watched on Friday was Freddy versus Jason.
That's, you know, that's a YouTube classic right there.
And you've never seen the full thing?
Of course not. Of course not. I think I would enjoy it now. But, you know, at the peak of my powers when I was watching five movies a day, I was too pretentious. You know, I was a pretender. I didn't want to have fun. This movie looks like so much fun.
It is a lot of damn fun. It is hilarious. Freddy's got a lot of great one-liners, which, by the way, favorite Freddy one-liner I got to give a shout out to, because I did recently rewatch Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors, when he kills a girl whose big dream, her only characteristic in the movie, is wanting to be a TV star. He smashes her head through a TV and says, "Welcome to prime time, bitch." Oh, God. These two
Freddy
franchises, man, they've just got something.
I think that you could, instead of remaking these or doing another one, I think you pair them up and do a scary movie. It would be about the same.
Honestly, yeah. Probably. And it's a shame. Like, these franchises died off, I think, because the remakes sucked so much.
Okay. Again, I was like 12. I didn't mind the Friday the 13th remake. Was it that bad?
I hated it. My boss did like that one, though. He was like, "Don't sleep on 13s. And I can't get behind it.
All right. I don't remember being that bad. But I do remember the. Okay, no. No, I got this twisted. Nightmare on Elm Street remake, I enjoyed. The Friday the 13th remake, I hated.
Oh, no, dude.
Yeah.
The Nightmare remake had a chance to do something really cool, I think. First off, great cast. It's got the husband from Smile and Rooney Mara as the two leads. And
Rorschach. As Freddy.
Yeah, but they had, the whole thing was leading towards what I thought was going to be a twist of, holy shit, in this world, Freddy was innocent when they killed him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did kind of fumble that, didn't they?
Drop the ball. So I assume, do you have any Nightmare on Elm Street or Friday the 13th rankings then, since we're talking about both?
Jason X is my favorite from the 9 YouTube clips I've seen. No, I really enjoy the original Nightmare on Elm Street, but I don't have a rankings for you. These franchises never were attractive to me until like probably 5 months ago.
I gotcha. Well, you should revisit some this Halloween season. I think you'd enjoy a lot of them.
Do you want me to go the serious route, or do I go the like unhinged, like balls to the walls ones?
I mean, I don't know. Okay, I'll give you my recommendations. If you were to watch three movies from each franchise, I would say Nightmare on Elm Street 1, Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors, and Wes Craven's New Nightmare. Those are the three films Wes Craven was like actually involved in the making of in that franchise. I think it's a great trilogy. I think you would really enjoy number 3, where they like are trained how to fight back against Freddy. It's really cool. And New Nightmare is like the blueprint for Scream. I don't know if you know that.
You're kidding.
No, it was like his test run. The whole premise is that Freddy, as like a being, comes into the real world to haunt the actress who plays Nancy.
No, no way.
It's very cool. Friday the 13th, I would recommend number one, just to revisit, just because it is a classic. Number four, because like I said, I think that's a great one. And number six is great too, but you could flip flop between 6 and 10. They're both equally as silly and fun.
Got it. Got it. How many of those six do you think I'd like? Two?
I think you'd love all three Nightmare on Elm Streets. I really do. The Jason ones, I think you'd like 1, 6, and 10.
Maybe. Okay.
I don't know.
I don't remember liking one all that much, but
yeah, actually we'll maybe see. You wouldn't. It's a pretty boring movie, actually.
Yeah. Jason X looks like a great time.
Knock back a couple of sudsy ones and you're golden for that.
I think so.
All right. I think I'm going to close out this pod then with my quick Friday 13th rankings, if you don't mind giving me the spotlight for a second, because I have watched all these movies last Halloween.
Fire away.
I'll work my way bottom up. The bottom is Friday the 13th from 2009. I give that a half star. Then Friday the 13th, 5, A New Beginning, 1 star. Jason Goes to Hell, The Final Friday, 1 star. Friday the 13th, Part 2, 1.5 stars. Friday the 13th, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan, 1.5 stars. Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood, 2 stars. Freddy vs. Jason, 3 stars. Friday the 13th, Part 3, 3 stars. Jason X, 3 stars. Friday the 13th, 3 stars. Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter, 3.5 stars. And finally, Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives, with 4 stars.
Cheers. 4 stars is pretty good for this franchise.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these movies really fucking suck. Jason Takes Manhattan is awful, genuinely, like one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. So are a lot of these, but they have their moments and they're fun to watch with people too. I would not recommend watching these alone.
So I gotta drive to Bloomington to do these.
Dude, okay, here's the plan, all right? So we have this pod series here. On 10/14, we have a wild card movie swap. That is your choice, The Thing, my choice, Messiah of Evil, and the popular pick, The Exorcist, which I think we're going to pivot to The Exorcist Part 3 because I've heard amazing things.
Okay. I'm okay with that, especially after Draco May's ticket on The Exorcist.
Yeah. I think you come down here for that, and we just watch as many fucking horror movies as we possibly can.
As long as we get a gym session in, I can sign off on that.
Deal. Let's do it.
Oh, great. You're going to see me in my worst state. I'm going to be sleeping like on the floor in your bedroom because I'm not sleeping out on the out on the couch with the lights off.
Yeah.
Just give me a nightlight. Give me a nightlight.
I actually think I'm in Oswego that weekend, so.
No. Even better.
Yeah, great. You don't even have to move. All right. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Blast Podcast. If you haven't downloaded our app, the Blast Movie app, please go search it on the App Store. It is available on iOS. If you can't find it on the App Store, go ahead and search blastmovies.net on your browser, and you will find a link to download it there. Feel free to leave us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate that. And be sure to check out our TikTok and our Instagram for all our latest content news. Our Instagram is @blast_movies_, and our TikTok is @blast.movies. Be sure to check those out. We have a little bit of bonus content coming there every now and again. So thank you all for listening once again, and we will see you next week with the start of our October pod series, which will focus on haunted house movies.
Here we go. Marlon Wayans come back. Ha ha ha.